Hello everyone, welcome back. It is the evening of February 3rd, 2015. It's a blustery, cool night here in Winnipeg. However, the month of January was incredible. We had a number of days where it was raining, and we very much missed the incredible deep freeze that we normally have at this time of year. It was much warmer than usual. However, we're back to the seasonal norms, and fortunately at this time of year it's not 40 below, so it's more like 15 or 16 below, which is actually very pleasant if the sun's shining. I've had about 5 people write in over the last month, so we'll get down to that shortly. As always, I want to thank anyone who has written in with questions or comments. I want to thank those who have sent in donations. I want to thank those who have ordered Budescence over the website. And as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for continuing to post these responses. As always, if you are listening to this website for the first time, and you're finding any of these responses difficult to relate to, and you're interested, you might consider looking at the two main talks on the website. If you go to the Listen Dropbox and you go down to the title Talks, you will come to two talks. The first one is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening, and the second one is titled Acknowledging the Moment. And they will give you the most direct and broadest overview of what it is I'm offering here. And with that, we'll get down to what has been sent in over this past month. A first person has written in response to something I mentioned in the last talk. He or she had written in to ask me whether I still experienced negative thoughts. And just to sum up very quickly, I had said that it had been so long since I had looked at thought in terms of negative or positive that I really could no longer identify what a negative thought might be. However, that I still very much experienced certain emotions, what we would call emotions. And I mentioned the passing away of a very close friend, in which situation I had experienced a very strong emotion. So this person wrote back saying, "Thanks for your reply, Daryl. I completely understand what you said. Although you examined that you cannot really identify a negative thought as such, you did say that you felt the emotion of grief when a good friend passed away, which is completely understandable. But I should have been more specific when I mentioned negative thoughts or emotions. What I was asking is, do you feel angry at times, or do you have an angry thought towards someone who has wronged you or someone else? Or just plain pissed off if your car broke down when you were on your way to somewhere important? You don't have to answer this question in your next talk. A short reply will do. Sorry to trouble you in any way. Many thanks." So, it's been a long time since I've experienced any real anger with someone. I can't really remember the last time that someone actually pissed me off. Or the last time that I felt any kind of rage at some frustrating situation. A huge portion of this non-dual sensibility is the acknowledgement that existence is moving to its own nature. It has its own inherent order. The happening of the moment, so the happening of this moment, is moving to its inherent order. So it's moving in the same way that an ocean might move, or it's moving the way a cloud might move through the sky, or it's like everything is moving in that way, or it's moving like the course of a storm. A storm would arise, it plays out in a certain way, and then it calms down. And all of that is an impersonal order. The next thought that you have, the next emotion that you have, is that arises out of the inherent nature of this moment. It's not that you're deciding to have a certain thought. Even if you have an urge to have a certain thought, and then you're provoked to have a certain thought, apparently, that urge to have a certain thought simply arises as an expression of the inherent nature of this moment. Now, there's no way to say what this moment is. Again, that's one of the basic aspects of non-duality. So you stop attempting to define the moment in any true way. Apparent thoughts still come and go, but you just no longer believe that that's an explanation of existence. Now, I'm often asking you to consider the question, what is there when there is no thinking? To think that question, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of the question, if you think that question, at the end of the question, there's no thought, but it doesn't feel like there's nothingness. There's something that remains. So once we realize that all the descriptions of existence are false, that all of these, the whole idea that we know the name of anything, the true name of anything, is ridiculous. And the whole idea that existence has a specific form that can be identified is ridiculous. So once it's realized that the stories that are composed of name and form, to talk about a world filled with people and animals and houses and all of that is ultimately ridiculous, because there was a time when there were no people and were no houses, and there will come another time at some point when there won't be any people on the planet Earth. There won't even be a planet Earth at some point, because in the life of the universe, these things are just temporary manifestations. They're passing appearances. So once it's realized that the storylines can't tell us what's actually going on here in this moment, then what actually is? So if we realize that a focus on the storylines is a focus on fantasy, how would we focus on actuality, on what actually is? So if we ask the question or think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? There may be a realization of the actual happening of the moment without this added interpretation, this fabrication this fantasy of name and form. So at the end of the question, we simply feel what remains when there's no thinking, when there's no thought present. What is it that actually remains? Now, this doesn't get rid of what we call thought. It just lets us connect with the actual vibrant, pulsing, buzzing, tingling, luminous happening of the moment. Again, these words aren't attempting to define it, but simply point to this livingness, this vitality that has no description whatsoever and no possibility of description. And once that's acknowledged, there may be the realization that this is what is, this unexplainable vitality, this unexplainable living, dynamic buzz and tingle. Not a thought. And it may be further realized that what we call thinking is simply one of the expressions of this livingness. And there's no way to say what that is either. We only call it thought because apparently someone told us to call it thought. There's no way to say what it is. So the acknowledgement is just a very simple acknowledgement of this vital, moving, shifting, dancing, buzz and tingle that can't possibly be explained in any way at all. And part of that acknowledgement would be the realization that this is simply moving on its own. So it's moving to its own nature. Now we're going to have to live with that. We're going to have to live with whatever this unexplainable vitality presents. There isn't any option. It's not personal. It's not someone deciding to be a jerk. It's not someone deciding to be unkind to us. Your automobile breaking down isn't deciding that it's going to break down. It isn't trying to annoy you. And the fact of the matter is, even the automobile breaking down is an expression of this totally unexplainable happening, moving to its own nature. Now, there's no possible way for us to define what that nature is. We could, in a way, say that it moves to its inherent order, its natural order. But there's no way to define what that natural order is, because this, the dynamic of this moment, the vital, moving, shifting, dancing happening of this moment never has any particular form. It's always moving on to some other expression. So it's ever creative. And we have no way of saying what's coming next. So if that's acknowledged in a very deep way, then the inclination to take things in some personal way is lessened to a great degree. Now, be very careful about asking somebody with a non-dual sensibility what it is that they experience, or what it is, or how it is that their emotional realm works or expresses itself. Because in this whole area of non-duality, this whole realm of apparent non-duality, each and every expression of existence is unique. So there's no way to find in someone else what you're supposed to be, or how nature is going to express you, because you are a unique expression. You are going to be different to every other apparent expression of humankind. And even though you may be very similar to another human being, you're never going to be exactly like any other human being. In the same way that no two snowflakes are identical. No two human beings can be identical. So in this realm of considering what we might call non-duality, do not try to find a specific expression of non-duality. Each and every apparent person who has a so-called non-dual sensibility is a unique expression. Their personality is somewhat different from every other apparent person that has a non-dual sensibility. I mean, ultimately, none of this is actually even a situation of people with non-dual sensibilities. There's just this ever-shifting, moving dynamic that has no specific form. And that's just the happening of this moment. The thoughts, the moods, the apparent things that we see, hear, touch, taste, smell, and think, all of that's moving, shifting, dancing. It has no specific form. Whatever it seems to be now is moving on to another apparent appearance. It never arrives anywhere in particular. And it's ever creative. There's no form here to be defined in any particular way. There's no particular type of human being that ever exists. Each and every apparent human being is unique. So be very careful about trying to compare your behavior to anyone else or to try to discover exactly what a non-dual sensibility will leave you feeling or leave you doing. If you're interested in this, simply acknowledge the totally unexplainable happening of this moment. Look around the room where you're in. And, you know, you can label everything that you see. You can look inward and label everything that you seem to perceive inside of you. But perhaps you can realize that none of those labels are true. That's not the actual name of what it is you're seeing. It's just a meaningless sound. And if you truly acknowledge your actual, what you would call your actual experience in life, you may come to realize that everything you've ever experienced is changing. The thoughts, the moods, sounds that are passing, vibrations, pulsations in the body, a little twinge here, a little twinge there, a little pain here, a little shift there, pain alleviating. One moment the attention grabbed by the breath, the next moment the attention grabbed by sound, the next moment the attention lost in thought, the next moment realizing, oh, lost in thought. The light of the day is changing, it's moving into night, the energies of the morning are waning and moving into sleep, deep sleep apparently at night, the weather is changing, the people around you are moving here and there, the various situations of your day are changing, the surface of the planet is moving and shifting, the various continental templates are shifting, the earth itself is turning, it's moving around the sun, the universe itself is a huge arrangement of spiraling constellations and nebulae, and everything is this moving, shifting, dancing event. simply expressing itself. None of it is personal. None of it is our personal doing. We don't create ourselves, so we don't create anything else. All of it is moving to an inherent order that we can't define in any way whatsoever. We don't really know what's coming next. So if that's acknowledged very clearly, then there is less anticipation or less expectation that it's going to be something that we want. It may be something that we've wanted, but it could just as easily be something that we absolutely do not want. The universe doesn't really care what we want. Existence isn't expressing itself to our wants. And so maybe in acknowledging that, there is less focus on what it is we want and more focus on what it is that existence is actually expressing. In that, there's less focus on our disappointment at not getting our wants. All right, I've had another person write in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Thanks for answering the questions that are sent in to you. I go to sleep listening to them most nights. I have two questions. The first one is, does this mean that nothing matters in life? Like, we grow up thinking our lives mean something, or that what's going on the planet is important, like going to the moon, or politics, or education, and I'm getting the feeling that there's really nothing important going on, and we might as well laugh our heads off at the whole thing. The second question is, I hear you often say that objects, trees, cars, other people are not solid, and they are moving and shifting. So what are you trying to say here? Are you saying that you are solid and everything else is moving, or everything else can't be real, but you are? It would be great if you could clarify that. What are you trying to convey when you say that? Thanks so much. Okay, so with this first question, does this perspective mean that nothing really matters in life and that we might as well laugh our heads off at the whole thing? Let's see. It's not really saying, it's ultimately saying that there's nothing to be concerned about in life because this whole thing is a totally unexplainable happening and nothing ever really seems to hurt that unexplainable happening. And we really are that unexplainable happening. We, you know, what we might consider to be a human being is very definitely a portion of this larger unexplainable happening of existence. So in some ways, we can laugh our heads off at the whole thing if we really have a sense of life being this unexplainable dance. And that's all there ever is, just this unexplainable dynamic, this vital livingness. It's not something in particular. It never will be anything in particular. It's not something definable. But on a day-to-day basis, it doesn't really mean that you're going to have the feeling that nothing matters. There will be all kinds of things that will seem to be important to you, simply because that's the natural expression of whatever this is. So it's not as though we'll lose interest in eating or sleeping or having friends or having an interest in the movies or whatever. those things are important to us, or they seem to have meaning to us, because that's a portion of the natural expression of this unexplainable vitality, this indefinable livingness. However, ultimately, the whole thing is just a totally unexplainable, indefinable dynamic. And to take any of it too seriously, the day-to-day situations, to take any of it too seriously, is no longer important. We will still have apparent urges to improve our life or to avoid difficult situations or apparently unhealthy situations. And all of that is the natural expression of this unexplainable livingness, this indefinable happening or eventing. And by eventing, I don't mean I'm not pointing to some definable event. The eventing is this formless functioning that's taking place. This dynamic, this action, this vitality, this livingness that this moment actually is. So with this acknowledgement of this indefinable livingness, this indefinable vitality, on a day-to-day basis, we still continue to have certain inclinations, apparent inclinations, inclinations to health, inclinations to avoid difficult situations, inclinations to perhaps explore unfair situations, to see if life is offering any other possibility. At the same time, as having a very deep underlying feeling that all of it is just some mysterious game that we might call existence. So, you know, within the Hindu traditions, they would acknowledge that all of this could be considered the play of existence. Just this great mysterious presence simply playing. Because even the most dire situation, a situation where it seems as though many human beings are dying, ultimately nothing is gained and nothing is lost. It's not like those human beings disappear totally. It's more that whatever this is, whatever the happening of this moment is, it has no particular form, and in certain particular moments it appears to be a certain human being. But even a certain human being isn't some particular form. We all know we were an eighth of an inch long in our mother's womb, and then we were a foot long, and then we were outside our mother's womb, and we were 2 feet tall, 3 feet tall, 5 feet tall, whatever. And then we apparently grew older through this whole process, and eventually we'll all turn to dust. So we're not a particular form. There is no particular form anywhere. Everything is this formless functioning, this vital, unformed dynamic. The appearance of form, the definition of form, the focus on form, is not a focus on what's truly going on here. Essentially, what's happening here is a vitality that has no form, a present livingness that has no form. It simply gives rise to an apparent parade of appearances. But that livingness is never destroyed. existence itself is this livingness. All of these definitions based on name and form are ultimately false. So in response to this person's second question, when I point that out, am I saying that I'm something solid and everything else is moving, so everything else can't be real, but I am? No, I'm not saying anything about existence. I'm pointing out that none of the descriptions of form are true. None of these names, these apparent names that we have for existence, are actually a true name for existence. Like when you look around you and you say, oh, there's a wall and there's a floor, that's not really, like that name for those things isn't the true name for this. You already know that when you came out of your mother's womb, you didn't have a name for anything. And within our world, our usual world of stories, the story is that somebody told us to call this a wall and to call this a floor. In a different country, you would get a different sound. So that we don't have a true name for anything. They're just meaningless sounds that point to these apparent forms. And then you'll also tell me that everything in your experience is changing. Everything in life is changing. So the idea that it's a particular form is false. The idea that you know the real name for anything is false. So I'm not saying there's anything solid anywhere. I'm not saying there's any particular form that can be found or named in any way whatsoever. What I'm saying is, let's maybe step outside of this focus on name and form to acknowledge what actually is. So right now, think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And just feel what remains. At the end of the question, there's no thought, just feel what remains. And as Jiddu Krishnamurti used to say, you begin to feel a movement, a wave upon wave. So you begin to feel the vital pulsing of the moment. Pulsations, vibrations, apparent moods arising and passing, apparent thoughts arising and passing, apparent sounds arising and passing, apparent sights arising and passing. This moving, shifting, dancing event of the moment. All right. Another person has written in saying, hi, Daryl. I'm experiencing a midlife crisis and wine addiction. I now have some health-related issues, inflammation, joint issues, weight gain, and other related issues. So I feel very uncomfortable at times and also very comfortable and really enjoy the wine. A bottle an evening. I sometimes recognize being out of control and okay with it, and at other times feel like my body's just being destroyed and feel despair. It seems a bit hopeless in that I resonate with the neo-non-duality messages about this is it, it's a happening, so this is it, and yet the conflicting I wish it were better is what's arising here. Very frustrating. I did try a number of times to sit with what is, to drink consciously, and still. Anyway, I don't quite get the part about I'm being played by the universe, it's all just happening, and having the desire to change, which then seems hopeless. I also am suspicious of programs and prescriptions for self-improvement after a lifetime of seeking, psychotherapy, spirituality, and attempted self-improvement, so I remain kind of stuck. I guess I'm asking for your help, even though as I'm writing this, it seems kind of futile. Any comments would be appreciated. Thanks. Okay, from this non-dual sensibility, and again, none of this is saying that anybody else has to have a non-dual sensibility. There is what we apparently call a non-dual sensibility within the apparent history of humankind. We have recorded commentaries on this that are 3,000 years old. And there are certain classical aspects of that perspective. So this person has written in being confused by the fact that she relates very strongly to this sense that everything is just this mysterious happening, that it's not a personal issue. And yet, at the same time, she's having this feeling of discontent with how things are, in this case, with her situation of her health not being so great, and that she's drinking perhaps more than she wishes to be drinking, and she would like something to change in here. So she's feeling somewhat conflicted in this situation, feeling kind of stuck. On the one hand, feeling everything is natural and she's a natural expression of whatever this is, and yet feeling this sense of conflict and despair with the situation of her drinking and her health, which isn't so great in this moment, and feeling the urge to have that change in some way. So first of all, let me say that having a non-dual sense of existence doesn't mean you're going to sit around feeling contented with absolutely everything that seems to be happening in every moment. A non-dual sensibility isn't going to give rise to any specific result. Whatever this happening of this moment is, it's ever creative in its expression. No two snowflakes are identical. No two human beings are identical. No two moments are identical. The range of apparent expression is infinitely unique, infinitely different. So it's entirely possible to see all of existence as being the natural dance of a totally unexplainable vitality, a present livingness, a formless functioning, a vital dynamic, an action, a motion, a moving, shifting, dancing event that's totally unexplainable. It's totally spontaneous, where you could say all of it is simply automatic. Everything occurs automatically. It's quite possible to have that sense of existence, a very deep sense that that's all there is, truly. And yet, in the next moment, it's quite possible for you to feel a lot of dis-ease or discomfort with the specific situation of the moment, for one simple reason, because that's just as natural an expression of this totally unexplainable happening as anything else. So everyone is really going to get a mixed bag of things. Apparently good things, apparently bad things, apparently happy things, apparently sad things. Apparently comfortable things, apparently uncomfortable things. There's no way around that. And in this natural expression of this great mysterious dance. It's quite possible for there to be a situation where you are drinking a lot, you're not living in a, what we would call a very healthy way, your apparent body is suffering in that situation, and even though you see that all of that is the natural expression of this mysterious dance, it's also possible that you are feeling as though you would like all of that to change and to move towards some, you know, what we would call healthy behavior. So not only do you have the urge to acknowledge life expressing itself naturally in whatever way it expresses itself, there may also be the urge to move away from a particular situation, to move away from a particular behavior that you're expressing in this particular moment. And all of that is the natural expression of whatever this is. Now, it's also the case that it's a very natural thing to feel stuck in that situation. And this situation of behaving in an apparently unhealthy manner and having a very strong urge to behave in a more healthy manner, these two apparent urges are both a natural expression of whatever life actually is. And the fact of the matter is, you're not going to move in any direction until one of those urges is stronger than the other. So I've explained this in a number of situations regarding addictions, in particular situations with alcohol, people who have written in wondering how to reconcile the non-dual sensibility that everything is just the natural expression of existence and there's nothing to be really concerned about. How do you reconcile that with the fact that you feel you have this addiction to alcohol and you're wanting to drop that addiction, to work on a day-to-day basis towards dropping that addiction? It's very simple from this non-dual sensibility. Whatever urge you have, you don't create. So in the situation of an addiction, nobody just decided to have the urge to be an addict. Or let me express that more clearly. I mean, nobody really wants to be an addict, but the wanting to drink or the wanting to use a certain drug as an escape, nobody decided to have that urge. That urge simply arises, it expresses itself very strongly, and perhaps it plays out as an apparent addiction. And then it's also the case that anyone who has ever dropped an addiction would have to realize that they didn't create the urge to drop the addiction, because no matter how much they wanted to drink or how much they wanted to use a particular drug, the urge to stop using it grew spontaneously until they could no longer ignore it. And then it seems that we might go through some struggle of urges until perhaps the urge to stop is strong enough that it's strong enough to live with all of the pain and difficulty of stopping. And eventually the addiction fades away. None of those urges is anyone's personal creation. As Schopenhauer pointed out in the late 1800s, you can do what you want to do, but you don't create your wants. And sometimes there are situations where the wants seem to be very strong in two different directions. And so it seems like we're stuck. until such times that one of the urges becomes stronger than the other, and we apparently move in that direction. Just an added point here. Just keep in mind that having a non-dual sense of existence doesn't mean you're going to get particularly a happy ending to anything. Perhaps remember the life of Christ. Christ lived absolutely with a non-dual sensibility and got nailed to a cross. You might also keep in mind that ultimately he didn't really, ultimately it was of no concern to him that he got nailed to a cross, because he realized that that was the only expression that existence could express in that moment. Now, I know for many that seems to be a very difficult thing to conceive. So, as always, be very careful about what you think existence is going to present if you have a particular sensibility. A non-dual sense of existence isn't saying, oh, if I have this sense of existence, everything is going to be a golden glowing event. All it is the acknowledgement that whatever this is, there's no way of saying what it is, and none of it is anybody's personal doing. Whatever this is that's happening in this moment, it will do whatever it's going to do, or it will be whatever it will be. So we're back to Doris Day singing, Que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. The future is not ours to see. So again, all of this is moving to its inherent nature, its natural order, but there's no way to define that natural order because it expresses itself in ever-creative events. You can't define what you've never seen before. What is has no specific form. It's always moving on to something apparently new. Not quite like anything that's come before. And many of the really clear non-dual presenters were what we would call alcoholic. Alan Watts, Chogyam Trungpa. These people were very, very clear in their sense of this totally unexplainable, mysterious dance of this moment. And yet, they were not what most people would call living a healthy life in relation to alcohol. All right, I've had another person write in wondering about responsibility and consequences. So, this person has said, there may not be any me making things happen, but we still have to face the consequences of actions, thoughts, and feelings. For example, we may not have created or chosen a certain reaction to what someone did or said. We still have to experience the effects of that reaction. Those effects are also the flow of life, but they can be very intense as they last. If someone believes what you say, they may give up any inquiry or action required to change their unhealthy behavior. If they abdicate responsibility or deny a problem, then they are left to suffer. On a practical level, they need to keep responsibility in mind if they want to ease their suffering. Expectations are an example. If expectations are not met, there is suffering, depending on the strength of the expectation. If you just accept this as part of the flow, one may be reluctant to explore those expectations and the possibility of letting them go in order to suffer less. So taking responsibility may be more appropriate in this case. How does this non-dual perspective help someone who believes it but is plagued by the issue that at the last part of a long chain of cause and effect, those effects have to be experienced by a person? Could you reconcile these points, please? Many thanks and warm regards. All right, so this is quite a common worry that if you really do accept this sense that everything is the natural expression of existence, that somehow on a day-to-day basis you will lose all interest in moving towards health or moving away from something that would be considered unhealthy. But that's not possible from a non-dual perspective. The non-dual perspective is pointing out that whatever you consider to be unhealthy and whatever you consider to be healthy, and your response to what you consider to be healthy or unhealthy, none of that is anybody's creation, is anybody's personal creation. That's the natural dance of existence. So, for instance, even though apparent me, I have a non-dual sense of existence, and I can see that hunger is simply the natural expression of existence, I still go get something to eat, because the response to that hunger is the natural expression of existence. It's also the case that if I walked into a really violent pub in some violent portion of some strange city, even though I can see that everything in that pub or that bar is a natural expression of existence, I'm not going to feel relaxed. There will be a sense of danger. And my response to that sense of danger isn't going to be, oh, I think I'll just relax and enjoy it. I think I'll relax and enjoy the possibility of having the crap kicked out of me. There will be a very naturally an urge to move away from a situation of apparent danger. This is another situation where people hear a non-dual presenter saying, there's nothing you have to do, and they misinterpret that. They think it's saying, do nothing. But that's not what it's saying. It's saying there's nothing you have to do because it's never been you doing anything right from the very start. So, having a non-dual perspective does not mean that the body is going to stop protecting itself in situations of apparent danger. It doesn't mean that the brain is not going to throw up some protective response in a situation where your job is in jeopardy or your relationship is having difficulty. the sense that some situation is dangerous or uncomfortable or unhealthy is the expression of this totally unexplainable happening. And the response to that situation is the expression of this totally unexplainable happening. So the whole notion of, you know, that if you really come to see life as being the impersonal and natural dance of existence, the whole idea that you're going to give up a sense of responsibility is ridiculous, because you don't create a sense of responsibility. You don't create it in the first place, so you're not going to have the option of getting rid of it with a non-dual sensibility. This person is concerned about someone abdicating responsibility or denying a problem that's existing in their life. So try this. The next time you're hungry, try to abdicate any responsibility of any response to that hunger. Or the next time you're tired and you want to sleep, try abdicating any responsibility for any response to that urge to sleep. Or try to ignore the difficulty. Try to ignore the problem. The next time you're hungry, just decide you're going to ignore the fact you're hungry and you're never going to eat again. Or the next time you're tired and you absolutely need to sleep, just ignore the problem and see what happens. If you're hungry, you're going to eat. If you're tired, you're going to sleep. If you feel that something is unhealthy in your life, you're probably going to explore the possibility of some option to that situation. To have a non-dual sense of existence does not mean that you're going to ignore problem situations. It doesn't mean that you're going to stand on the top of a skyscraper and just walk off the edge because you're not concerned that you're going to fall. You will still have the feeling that you could fall off the building and hurt yourself. And all of that's the expression of the totally unexplainable happening of existence. It doesn't mean that if you have a non-dual sensibility, you're going to start walking down the highway into oncoming traffic. You will still have a sense of self-preservation. The body will want to take care of itself. The apparent brain will not feel comfortable in a situation where somebody's screaming at us, or in a situation in intimate relationship with a partner, that partner is no longer getting along with us. Having a non-dual sensibility doesn't mean you sit back and enjoy that. There will still be a response to what we would call unhealthy situations, and that response isn't our creation. There will be an urge to move towards health in most cases. However, something that may be different is that most people walk around thinking that they have some absolute control over existence, even though if you ask them to examine that situation carefully, they would say that, no, I don't have absolute control over existence. From moment to moment, most people walk around behaving as though they do have absolute control over existence, because they will be saying, oh, you know, this situation in my life, you know, I just don't respond to it the way I want to. I don't know what's wrong with me. I should be able to respond in a certain way. Someone with a non-dual perspective will always be acknowledging that, you know, I don't know what's possible here. This situation is uncomfortable. I have an urge to explore the possibilities that life might present in this situation, the options that life might present in this situation, but I know I'm not in charge. So I'll explore the possibilities, but ultimately I'm going to have to live with what life presents. I will have to live with whatever options life presents. All right, and then a last person has written in saying, hi, Daryl. I've been resonating with your non-dual view for a long time. On the other hand, I've been quarreling with my life story or fate for the entire time. I am 70 years old and fear death and the senselessness of life in the face of the big nothingness that comes after. Are there any words to help me out of an increasingly depressive path I fear falling into? Thanks in advance for any thought that might help. Okay, so the first thing that comes up is this comment about death being the big nothingness that comes after what we're experiencing now. No apparent person that has ever lived has ever experienced a big nothingness and never will experience a big nothingness. So there's no need to be concerned about experiencing a big nothingness. If we stay within the stories that everybody has, we could say that before we were born, we were dead. And nobody has the experience, nobody has a memory of lying around for thousands of years with a big nothingness. And in the same way, when this apparent life ends and we're dead, we're not going to be lying around experiencing a big nothingness. See, the weird thing is, nobody has ever experienced death. All that's ever experienced is this vital happening of the moment. Even in the middle of the night, in deep sleep, nobody's experiencing anything. The sense of experiencing something is gone, apparently. You don't wake up in the morning thinking, oh God, what a terrible night. I just experienced a big nothingness for 8 hours. Instead, you wake up refreshed. If you had a really deep, deep sleep where there was no sense of experiencing anything at all, you wake up feeling refreshed. And in that so-called nothingness of the deep sleep, You weren't lying there frightened out of your wits about a big nothingness that you were experiencing. So in the same way that you might have a wonderful day and then you simply fall asleep in the evening and you're not afraid of that because there's nothing to fear in that deep sleep. In the same way, we could perhaps say, enjoy your life right now. Even though life has a lot of crap, It still has some really beautiful things, and there are things that you enjoy. So enjoy them. And when this so-called death comes, it's simply like going to sleep in the evening. There's nothing to fear in that going to sleep, and there's nothing to fear in this so-called death. You're not going to experience an eternity of nothingness. It won't be a situation of you lying there experiencing anything or having to be concerned about anything. It's as simple as going to sleep. In the same way that you could say, in deep sleep, there is no sense of experiencing anything, that in deep sleep there's simply a very deep rest, we might consider that death is an even deeper rest, an even deeper state of deep sleep. So, just as there's nothing to be afraid of in deep sleep, there's nothing to be afraid of in this so-called death. Again, no one has ever experienced death. We get a lot of people saying, oh yeah, I died and returned, but they didn't die and returned. Or we get a lot of people saying, well, I had this near-death experience, but keep in mind that they call it a near-death experience. Nobody has a death experience. In the same way that you don't have an experience in deep sleep, you don't have a death experience. All right, so that's all that's coming up in response to that question, and that brings us to the end of what's been sent in over the past month. So, let's see. It's a little over an hour for the response to those questions. There are a couple of other things that I would like to consider at this point. Most people I run into are attempting to understand this non-dual sense of existence through ideas. And that's the main reason they can't connect with this sensibility. They're trying to understand existence through concepts. And a non-dual sensibility has no sense of understanding existence. And in fact, there's no interest in concepts. What we call concepts still arise, but there's no interest in them because they're a totally automatic expression, a totally automatic happening in the same way that a cloud moves through the sky or a wave moves on an ocean. We don't have to understand anything. The cloud moves the way it moves. The waves move the way they move. And in exactly the same way, all thoughts move the way they move. There's nobody making them happen. There's nobody influencing them. They're a totally unexplainable happening, like a cloud or a wave. It's just a dance of existence itself. So, there are basically a couple of ways that we can acknowledge the happening of this moment. What we would call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, this basic happening of this moment. Now we can, it seems, be totally focused on the world of thought and explanation. Or we can acknowledge that these thoughts are one small portion of a bigger happening that we would call the big happening of the moment. What we would normally call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Thinking is just one small portion of it. So we can either be totally focused on that one small portion, the world of description, or we can acknowledge the larger happening, the seeing, the hearing, the touching, the tasting, the smelling, as well as the thinking happening, and not call it anything. It's just the acknowledgement of this larger holistic movement, everything moving and shifting and dancing on its own, what we would call breath coming and going, heart beating, moods rising up, changing, fading away, pulsations, vibrations, a little twinge here, a little twinge there, a little pain here, a little shift there, the pain alleviating, one moment the attention grabbed by thought, the next moment the attention grabbed by the breath, or by sound, or by pain. The moving, shifting, dancing, lightening, darkening, tightening, loosening, warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, happening, this dynamic, this vital, moving, shifting liveliness, this unexplainable, formless functioning, this vitality, this movement, this action that can't be explained in any way whatsoever. And with that, the realization that thoughts, the things that we, these descriptions that we think are so important, so necessary to really get lost in these explanations of existence, we may come to realize that getting lost in those explanations is really unnecessary. They will push themselves forward whenever they push themselves forward, whenever they're necessary, as an automatic action, an automatic happening. And we may play with those descriptions to some degree, but it's not necessary to stay focused on those things. And in fact, you may come to realize that description is despair. The belief in those descriptions, the belief that those descriptions are telling us what's happening here, that's a world of despair. That's where all the sorrow, the lamentation, the pain, the grief, and the despair actually exist. We may come to realize, if we come to realize that these storylines that we have, the belief that we know the real name of anything, the belief that life is a bunch of distinct and stable forms, if we come to realize that the notion of name and form is fantasy, to think that that is reality is a misconception. In our actual experience, we don't have a true name for anything. Nobody came out of the womb knowing any actual name for anything. We were all taught to name something by a certain term. And people in other countries are given different names for various things. And everyone's experience is that everything in life is changing. The thoughts, the moods, the relationships, the careers, the planet, the weather, the solar system, everything is moving and shifting and dancing. In fact, if there is one thing that everyone on the planet can seem to acknowledge is that everything changes. So to walk around thinking that life has describable form is not true from our actual experience. To walk around thinking that we truly know the names of things is not true. So this idea of name and form is a total fabrication. It's a total fantasy. And it may seem useful in moments, but it doesn't describe what's going on here. In fact, it contradicts what's actually going on here. This notion that life has form. If we walk around thinking it has form, then we'll ultimately be frustrated because everything is changing. And wonder of wonders, that's what everybody's doing. Wandering around, complaining because everything is changing. Perhaps if one realizes that these stories are absolute fantasy, if there's the realization that they're a total fiction, a lie, a fabrication, that they are not describing what's happening here, perhaps there will be an acknowledgement of the vital dance of this moment, the moving, shifting, ever-creative dance of whatever this is, just the happening of this moment. I mean, within all of the spiritual traditions that have teachings of meditation or contemplative practice, it was simply to acknowledge the vital dance of this moment. You sit down or lie down, you make no effort to do anything at all, and everything happens anyway. Breath comes and goes, heart beats, moods move and shift, thoughts come and go, sounds come and go, there's pulsation, vibration, little twinge here, little twinge there, the attention is drawn to the breath, next moment it's drawn to sound, the next moment it's lost in thought, the next moment there's the realization, oh, I was just lost in thought. And the larger dance of the moment makes itself obvious. So the great truth, the great realization that everyone's searching for in these spiritual traditions is very obvious. You sit down or lie down, you make no effort whatsoever, and everything happens anyway. A totally unexplainable, unnameable, formless functioning, an action, a dynamic, a moving, shifting, dancing ocean of existence, a flowing river of life. The Great Spirit. The formless presence. And there isn't anything existing apart from that. There's no me that exists apart from that. There's no way to predict what it's going to do next. We'd like to be able to predict exactly what it's going to do next, but we can't predict exactly what it's going to do next. The movement of everything in existence is very much like the movement of the weather. It seems as though there's a predictable pattern there, but actually the weather people can never predict exactly how the weather is going to present itself, because the weather is an ever-creative event. It never repeats itself from moment to moment. And it's the same with everything in existence. It's not moving to anybody's personal wishes. Whatever is happening in this moment, there's no way to say what it is. It's moving to its inherent nature, and there's no way to say what that is. There's no way to truly define it. Even if we monitor all of the apparent movement of the apparent things in this moment, and we would like to be able to predict what the next expression is going to be, we'll discover that we never exactly predict what the next moment is going to present. If you ask the weather experts, you know, ask them, if you had the best technology you could possibly have so that you could monitor every possible movement of the weather, would you then be able to predict what's going to happen with total confidence? And they'll tell you no, that there's absolutely no way to predict what the weather's truly going to do from moment to moment. And that's, I mean, Christ tried to explain this 2,000 years ago, saying the wind blows wherever it blows. You can't know where it's coming from, and you can't know where it's going to. And it's exactly the same for everything born of spirit. Now, if you realize that none of this is your doing, that there are no people influencing any of this in any way whatsoever, then there is simply the creative expression of this apparent moment. And there's no way to define that expression. There's no way to predict that expression. It simply moves to its own nature. It has its own natural order. And everything that's happening right now, everything, is an expression of that natural order. There's lots of it that we don't like. It doesn't really matter that we don't like it. It's an expression of the inherent nature of whatever this is. It's simply happening automatically, spontaneously, organically. However you want to say it is fine. It's just happening the way it happens. Now, if we really acknowledge that, we come to realize that within our day-to-day situations, we can only have what life offers. When I lived as a monk in England, one of the big aspects of the life of a monastic in Buddhist traditions, in the Orthodox Buddhist traditions, is that you can only have what you're offered. That, you know, you're not allowed to eat anything at all. You're only allowed to eat whatever you're offered. And you got certain basics in life and nothing more. But this whole aspect of you can only have what's offered was part of the monastic life because that's a fact of existence. In life, you can only have what life offers. Fortunately, it offers a wide variety of things. It offers joy and sorrow, clarity and confusion, feast and famine, contentment and despair. ease and dis-ease. All of it, a totally unexplainable vibrancy, expressing itself to its own nature, expressing its own natural order, an order that can't be defined because it's ever creative, ever moving on to some other appearance, ever moving on to something unexpected, ever moving on to something that we can't truly anticipate or expect. So it becomes, you know, if this is acknowledged, it becomes endlessly entertaining, because who knows what's being expressed next? Are you going to get another breath? Who knows? Are you going to get another love affair? Who knows? Is the next moment going to be happy or sad? Is your body going to be healthy or unhealthy? Who knows? It will be whatever it will be. Now, in this acknowledgement, ultimately, there's nothing to be concerned about. Even though on a day-to-day basis there may be concerns about relationship and career and health and the rent and so on, ultimately there's nothing to be concerned about, because this is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening, a vital presence, a vital formless presence, simply being a vital formless presence. And that's all that ever exists. This moment, breath coming and going, heart beating, pulsation, vibration, waves of energy, warming, cooling, lightening, darkening, tightening, loosening, vibrating, pulsing, tingling, buzzing. Just this unexplainable vitality, vital liveliness. Simply being an unexplainable, formless vitality. A buzzing and tingling. That's all that ever is. It doesn't seem to have any beginning. It doesn't seem to have any ending. That's all that ever is. So, as always, all of that is simply for your consideration. I'm not saying that you have to see life in this way. But come on, let's get real here. Like really, it's a very simple thing to see that when you came out of the womb, you didn't have any story for this. Like if you were 1 hour old right now, you wouldn't have a story for any of this. So what actually is? I mean, it's a very simple thing to explore. We can think the question, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of it, we just feel what remains. And if that gets a bit vague, think the question again. What is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of the question, simply feel what remains. And perhaps there will be an acknowledgement of this pulsing, waving, moving, shifting happening of the moment. And the thoughts will come back as a portion of that moving, shifting, dancing event. If we begin to acknowledge this holistic dance of the moment, and realize that that can't be defined, it can't be explained. Perhaps if we realize that in simply sitting or lying down and making no effort at all, that vibrant holistic dance occurs anyway. No one's making it happen. We don't exist as anything apart from that. It can't be explained. In that realization, perhaps there will be a sense of ease. Who knows? You'll never know unless you explore it. But it's not necessary for you to explore it. This is only for those that are interested. It's not saying that everyone has to explore this. It's not saying that everyone has to have this sense of existence. This is simply presented for your consideration. So that brings us to the end of this month's response. I wish you only good things over the coming month. But as always, I know you're going to get a mixed bag of things. However, I still wish you only good things. So, until next time, take care. Bye.